From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour. Well, you don't need me to tell you, do you? 2 weeks from today, Election Day. Now, many Americans are voting early by mail. Some are going to vote early in person. But you can vote 2 weeks from today, and voters in the 138th Assembly District have a chance to fill out their ballots and make a choice. They'll see a couple candidates for that Assembly seat. The Democratic incumbent, that's Harry Brunson, who is running for a sixth term, and Republican challenger Peter Vasquez, who is vying for the seat for the fourth time. The district includes parts of the city of Rochester and parts of Henrietta and Chi-Lai. And we're talking at length with both candidates today about their platforms and priorities for the district. They are small business owners. They've got a chance to tell you how their business perspective informs their positions. They've got different views on what Albany should be doing in this pandemic in regards to economic development and more. Let's welcome them together now. Harry Brunson, the Democratic incumbent for the 138th Assembly District, is also a small business owner in Rochester. Harry, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
You got it. Peter Vasquez, Republican candidate for the 138th Assembly District. He's also a small business owner, a high school teacher, a veteran, and president of the Frederick Douglass Foundation of New York. Peter, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation. It's my pleasure to be here.
Let me ask both of you, and I'm going to start with the challenger. Peter, you've run for this seat before. Why are you running again? What is motivating you to run for this seat?
All right, wonderful. Well, it's my fourth time running. It's going on 10 years, and it's the same issues. Nothing's changing. And I think it's time that in the 138th and throughout New York State, we start looking at different policies, real change. Whether it's Harry or another Democrat, the policies continue to remain the same. And that's what I'm looking to change.
Well, we'll get into the specifics coming up here. Harry Brunson, this is a run for a sixth term. Why is this still a seat that you find valuable and one that you want to go back to?
Well, you know, my mom taught me a long time ago that one of the goals of life is to leave the world a little bit better than how you found it. And I have found that working in public service is a way to give back and a way to contribute to make things a little bit better. And, you know, these are difficult times that we're facing. We are facing three crises simultaneously: COVID-19 health crisis, the economic downfall, and racial injustice. And I'm a firm believer, though, that we're going to get through this together as a community and as a family. And my goal in the upcoming term is to continue the good work that we've been doing to make sure that families have good paying jobs with benefits, make sure that they have access to health care, make sure that our criminal justice system is fair, especially to communities of color and all of us, and to make sure that we have the assets that we need to thrive as families, not just survive, but thrive. And so there's a lot more work to do, and I am honored to represent the families of the 138th, and I will be honored to continue that representation if they choose on November 3rd.
I want to ask both of you about your respective parties, and I'll start with Peter Vasquez. In 2016, you very narrowly lost the Republican primary. I think it was 3 votes to Bob Zink.
And
You told the Democrat and Chronicle that you wished more people had come out to vote, that the race should have gotten more attention. And you also blamed local party leaders, including then County Chairman Bill Reilich, for fracturing the party and driving people away and turning them off to politics. You said at the time, quote, "It doesn't mean anything to be a Republican anymore," end quote. Do you still feel that way?
You know, excuse me, it's unfortunate, but yes, there was a lot of damage done to the party with previous leadership, although that has changed, and I think we have solid leadership now. So, yes, I do believe in the Republican philosophy, and this has probably gotten me in trouble with the party quite a bit, but I believe that when you call yourself a Republican or you call yourself a Democrat, what you're saying is that you represent a set of values. And I think one of the reasons why we have so many people that are like-minded like us that either don't vote or haven't voted because they lost trust in the party. But I'd like to remind everybody, like I did back then, that it's a philosophy that we're standing on, not so much the party. Although, like I said, we have good leadership now.
How do you feel about Republican, what it means to be a Republican nationally? And yes, in a way I'm asking, you know, how you feel about the president and whether you think that that does represent Republican values.
Gotcha. Well, you know, again, everybody runs their own campaign. I mean, I wish more people spent more time looking at the individuals versus looking at party affiliations. I think we would have much more of a balanced government, and definitely we would have legislators that are working for the people, bottom up versus top down. I believe that the Republican philosophy is what brought me from being extremely poor, from walking down the streets, wondering if that's the day that I'm going to end up shot by a stray bullet or otherwise. And just being poor. I mean, this is what brought me from a high school dropout to being a master's graduate, running a business, teaching students, involved in politics, running a very effective chapter of a very effective national organization. I'm not campaigning for Trump. So, I mean, but obviously I can't support a party line that just preaches death and despair. So as far as Republicans nationwide and my feel for Trump, I like his policies. You know, for the first time in my lifetime, I've actually have seen double-digit returns in my investments. I have seen people in the Hispanic community that have been struggling for so long finally getting career opportunities versus just jobs. I believe that it's the Republican philosophy of and that truly lifts people up. You know, when we talk about smaller government, when we talk about control, Bronson talks a lot about family. However, we have policies in place right now under this Democrat philosophy that is stripping parents and families from their rights to raise their children as they see fit. I mean, I can't subscribe to that kind of philosophy.
Okay, and fair enough. And just to be clear here, the deficit is bigger than it's ever been under this president, and the growth of government has continued under this president. I mean, I'm not really sure what you're seeing in terms of smaller government and, you know, and sort of conservative spending values there. But did I miss something there?
Right, Evan. And listen, again, I'm not running for national office.
No, I hear you.
Probably a great question for George for him to answer.
That's fine.
However, I believe that COVID put some added cost to the national deficit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Which was unexpected. But I also know that, again, in the black and brown community, we're seeing more people employed and more businesses flourishing than any other time.
I will respect Peter's point there. He's not running for a national office. He's running for a statewide office. Before the pandemic hit, the deficit was massive and the government growth was still happening. I mean, that's why I think a lot of people look at this president not really sure if it aligns with typical conservative values. But let's move on because Peter's right.
Well, there's no perfect candidate. And unfortunately, we do live in a time sometimes where we have to pick the lesser of two evils. And that's something that I hope that over time we can fix.
Okay. Well, Harry Bronson, on your side, let's talk about your party. Back in the primary, you did not win the official party endorsement in Monroe County. You won pretty easily in that primary. You defeated the mayor's chief of staff. But I'm wondering if you feel that your party is united now. I mean, there was a heated battle in the primaries on the presidential side. And do you feel that locally and nationally your party is more united now than perhaps it was in the spring?
Well, let me say this. I am proud to be part of the Democratic Party. It is a party that has, quite frankly, moved closer to where I am on progressive ideals and progressive positions nationally. We have some movement to continue there. And these progressive ideals and policies are ones that are so consistent with my philosophy of life. And that is making sure that we see the dignity and humanity of every human being, no matter who they are or what they look like or who they love. And our local party has gone through some bumps over the last few years. It continues to work through those. We have new leadership. I'm so pleased that Zach King is the new chair of our party, elected a couple of weeks ago, with a team of black individuals, a team of brown individuals, women and men, gay and straight. It is the most diverse team we've ever had running our party. And I look forward to working with them to continue to move us forward in a progressive way and to continue to build on what we have been working on. And that is making sure that our families get what they need through government and electing officials who will truly represent them, putting people first. And I'm happy where we're at. We have a lot of work to do, as you know. There is some division within the party. I suggest those divisions are mostly about power, but we're not immune from racial tension and racial issues. But I am willing to be part of the team to work on all of that so that we can do what we're supposed to be doing. And those of us who are in elected or appointed office, we're there to serve the families of Monroe County. And I look forward to doing that.
Let me ask both of the candidates. I'll start with Assemblyman Bronson on this one. Let me ask both of you how you feel about the balance that New York State has tried to strike and whether you think it's been effective in dealing with this pandemic. Now, every state has to decide how much to sort of limit with the economy, the economic activity, especially indoor locations that we know are the biggest places where this virus spreads, with also realizing that a lot of businesses are starting to be right on the edge and are worried about surviving this winter. Harry Bronson, how do you feel New York State has done in dealing with this pandemic while also trying to make sure businesses can survive it?
Well, Evan, as you noted in the beginning of the show, I'm also a small business owner. I own a coffee shop. Myself and my business partner own it together. Fortunately, he deals with most of the day-to-day operations. But I fully understand the struggles that businesses are going through. The food and beverage industry is one of the hardest hit because of COVID and because, you know, those businesses are volume businesses. They're about bringing people in, having crowds, and having a lot of sales because the profit margin is so slim. These are difficult times. And so I appreciate that from a business standpoint. They're difficult times for our families who are trying to balance educating their kids remotely, if they're still doing that, like our families in the city of Rochester, and childcare issues and making sure that we keep each other healthy and social distancing, which is hard because we're social beings. All of that being said, I think the governor did a very good job in balancing those issues. I think he could have communicated some issues a little bit better than he did, but for the most part, a very good job of balancing them. We were a state that had some of the highest levels of infection and spread in the beginning of the pandemic. And at this point, we have some of the best numbers across the country. And a lot of that has to do because New Yorkers listened to the science, listened to the evidence, took steps to keep each other safe and healthy. And right now we're at that point. We're all very concerned, rightfully so, of whether or not the second wave is going to hit during these fall months and into the winter. And we're going to have to keep doing what we were doing, and that is making sure that we wash our hands regularly, social distance, and wear our facial coverings, and take steps to keep each other healthy.
What are you most concerned about as we go through the winter, Harry, when it comes to businesses like yours, frankly, and especially bars, restaurants that feel like they're not far away from being able, from saying that they can't get through? I mean, is there more that the state needs to do right now or in the short term, or is this more of a federal problem to deal with?
No, I think it's both. Certainly, we look forward to a federal stimulus at some point. It should have happened a long time ago, and the battles there have prevented it. But we need a federal stimulus package for all kinds of areas, business, education, healthcare, et cetera. But with that federal stimulus, that's only part of the equation. The other part of the equation is the state has to step up. The state has to help out small businesses. From a financial standpoint, from a policy standpoint, we have done some of that with moratoriums on evictions, both for residential, but also commercial leases. But there's other steps that we can take to help businesses with the PPEs that they need, the sanitizing equipment, help businesses in connection with paid sick leave that will help our families, but will also help our businesses so that they can, you know, when a worker is out, you know, that's a double hit for businesses. So all of those kind of things are issues that we need to be looking at. I know the governor is looking at them. I'm part of the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council. As of September 25th, we submitted a recovery plan that looked at every sector in our area. We broke it down by several sectors and what we would need from a short-term immediate help and policies to midterm to long-term. The governor, as I understand it, is reviewing those from across the state right now, and we'll be putting together a package that will help businesses and families as we go through this second wave.
Peter Vasquez, how has New York State done in trying to find that balance in the pandemic?
Well, I'm assuming you already know I'm kind of opposite everything that Brownson said there. But first of all, I'd like to point out, Brownson said he's a proud Democrat, although recently he made reference to being a Democrat isn't enough these days. Listen, this is the issue. We've got two venues here, two paths forward, one that is heavy in government, one that just completely disregards, people to make wise decisions. Seniors, my mother included, and the mother of many of the people that I know haven't seen family in months and months, and many of them are suffering and have died as a result or getting worse. Businesses are going out of business, and we don't have students back in school. However, I don't see where the numbers justify this complete just shutting things down or keeping things closed down. I'm glad to see that the governor has decided to look at things more regional now. However, small businesses are struggling. We talk about more money from the government, and that's fine to help kind of offset some of this. But really, if people can just get back to work, if businesses can open their door, Evan, we've shown that businesses are willing to follow the protocols that the governor wants to put in place or has put in place, but many aren't given the opportunities to do so. Churches, many churches can't even worship. I don't find that as a balance. I understand the science and I can read numbers, but by all means, I'm not a doctor or a scientist, but I know how to read and I know how to dissect that information. And again, at least in our area, I'm not seeing why our representatives aren't demanding for our kids to go back to school and businesses to reopen.
All right, so what businesses, Peter? What businesses? So let's be specific then, because I hear the point. But what businesses are closed right now by order of the government that you want to see open?
Well, movie theaters up until recently is one of the big ones. Bowling alleys up until recently. But listen, it's not just open, Evan. It's open at 100%.
So let's talk about that.
I think seeing one of the between the president and his opponent, you know, seeing these guys catch COVID, these are the most some of the most protected people in the world, and if they're catching COVID, then I think it's pretty safe to say, okay, it's quite possible that people are going to catch it. You know, I did the class for the for contact tracer, Evan, and again, the numbers just don't match keeping everything closed the way they are.
But Peter, this White House is the least closed. I mean, they're not. You don't really think this White House is? They have not even tried to stay away from the virus, right? I mean, they don't wear masks. They go to big rallies in public, indoors. I mean, I understand the point you're making that people will get COVID. You can't. Unless you're New Zealand, apparently.
We've had riots with hundreds and hundreds and sometimes thousands of people here in Rochester, and I've been at every single one of them, watching either from afar or coming together with my chaplain cohort and praying there. It's And people, and that isn't, I mean, you're making a comparison, or you're saying that in the White House we've got these rallies. Well, here too, and throughout the country, and the numbers still haven't gone up to concern you.
Well, I want to get back to business, but the point I'm making is you can't really say, well, look, even the White House got COVID. Nobody can stop it. The White House is not trying to stop it. Well, I mean, that's like saying, that's like me saying, I can't believe I gained weight when I ate nothing but chocolate sundaes for a month. But
I believe staffers from Biden's campaign recently got it as well, where they both went.
Sure,
on,
absolutely.
Or at least Kamala went on.
That's a better, right? Sure, sure. Yeah, that's a fair point. It's going to happen. I take that point, but it's not necessarily going to happen all at the same pace. So let's talk about how broadly to be open. So, are you at the point, Peter, where you think New York ought to say where we are, at least in the Rochester Finger Lakes region, it is your choice as a business. Everybody is allowed to be open 100%. Are we there yet?
I believe so. At least for our general area, yes. I believe the upstate New York area, from what I'm seeing in the numbers, especially Monroe County, should be allowed to reopen at 100%.
Okay. Well, Harry Bronson, let's talk
and
about...
And that's a discuss...
Go ahead, Peter. I don't want to interrupt. Go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, again, leaving these discussions to local municipalities, local healthcare professionals, makes more sense than a governor that has these emergency powers that that Bronson voted against taking away, making these arbitration decisions that he's saying based on science. But, you know, yet again, I and some much smarter people than I don't see those numbers lining up with what's going on here.
All right. So Assemblyman Bronson, your opponent is saying we're at least in this region, we are in a position of advantage. In fact, Monroe County, for counties its size, has the lowest numbers in the country. Why are you not agreeing with your opponent that we can be 100% open with every business and leave it up to their own discretion? Assemblyman Bronson, let's go ahead and make sure you're off mute. I'm not sure I'm hearing you. Hold on.
Oh,
there you are.
Yeah,
go ahead. Start again if you could. Yep.
Yeah, because I believe the science and the medical professionals have indicated the reason our numbers are as low as they are is because we have been practicing the social distancing and other measures that are necessary. The fact that restaurants can only be 50% capacity is a mechanism to ensure that there is social distancing. It is all about if people come in, they are wearing masks while they're standing, when they're sitting down with their friends or family, having their dinner, or in my case, having their coffee and dessert. Those tables are 6 feet apart. And so you can't manage that if you're 100% capacity inside the building. So our numbers are very good, and thankfully they are. But they're good because of the measures and the safeguards that we've been taking. And so to somehow suggest, because the numbers are good, let's resort to being open 100% and not using those safety protocols doesn't seem very logical to me.
One more point on this. I'll ask Peter Vasquez, how do you feel about mask mandates?
Well, again, I don't think that mandates are the solution here. Whether you're standing up in a restaurant or whether you're sitting down, the moment the mask comes off, the risk is the same. To Harry's point, it's not a valid point. Mask mandates, listen, if you feel that you need to wear it, if you feel that you you don't want to get it, or that you're high risk, I guess, then by all means, put it on. No one's saying, but to mandate it, that doesn't make any sense.
Okay. It's more about not spreading it. It's not necessarily about not getting it. But do you, Peter?
Well,
go ahead, Harry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry for interrupting, but that statement was ridiculous. It's you know, the mandate is so that you don't spread the virus to somebody else, and it is inappropriate to say that somehow we should have this freedom of choice of wearing a mask or not wearing a mask when the harm is about to somebody else. It's not about you.
We're talking about the same thing with the flu. The flu transmits the exact same way and with the exact same numbers, Harry. So if we're going to talk about masking people, are you suggesting that we take the same course of action for every type of virus that we have? I mean, come on.
There comes a time where we the people
have to have the ability.
You know, these Trumpian tropes just aren't going to work. The mask is there to provide safety for other people. We do not have a vaccination to provide safety for other people.
We have a vaccination for the flu, and the flu is still killing more than 61,000 people a year.
No, it's about half that. That's a high number. It's about half that. But go ahead.
Well, it's about there. It's around there. And I'm thinking maybe minutes. But regardless, it's a very high numbers, and we do have a vaccination. Again, our numbers are showing that we're to a point where we the people are making decisions that are in line with the recommendations. It's time for the state to start taking a step back and allowing locally for this to be taken care of on an individual basis.
All right. I'll let Harry Bronson respond to his opponent on that. Then we're going to move to some other ideas. Go ahead, Harry. Last thought on the pandemic. Go ahead.
I think we need to continue to have guidelines that will help people keep each other safe. And, this isn't an issue of freedom. This is an issue of how do we keep our community safe as we possibly can, knowing that there will be further infections. That you can't prevent this 100%.
Flu-related deaths, according to Stat News, range from about 12,000 to 60,000. So Peter's right on the high end there. 30 is about an average. And we are well past, around 225K and counting now in this pandemic. Let me get Pete in Rochester on the phone on a point about the governor's powers, though. Let's talk about that. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, good morning, Harry. First of all, I'm offended by you turning this into a political issue by calling this a Trumpian. We should be looking at the evidence. Now, all of the numbers should come into question because the PCR test, which is used as gold standard here to determine infection, was designed by Dr. Kerry Mullis, who won a Nobel Prize for designing the test. And he himself stated that it is not designed to detect infection disease. So all of the numbers are in question. The problem, and I would suggest anybody go to YouTube. It's still up. I'm surprised it's still up. By Dr. Reiner, R-E-N.
Now, Pete, thanks for the phone call. What I'm going to do is I'm going to reroute the point Pete's making here, because we're not spreading YouTube conspiracy news. We're just not going to do that. And Pete's idea that all the numbers are in question is not accurate. There is certainly a question about rapid testing, antigen testing versus the nasal swabs. There's a real question there, and you ought to read Michael Mina, who's an epidemiologist out of Harvard, about that. He believes, Dr. Mina believes, we are much closer to rapid testing. They call them spit testing, because they are not as sensitive as the nasal swabs, but they're more likely to tell you if you are infectious. So it's a really interesting debate about that. That's the kind of question we're at right now. I would urge you to read that. But Pete's other point that he told our screener, and I will ask Harry Bronson about this, he believes that the governor has taken dictatorial power in handling this pandemic. In other words, Pete, the phone caller, not Peter Vasquez, though I'll let Peter Vasquez respond too. Pete, the phone caller, is saying this governor has stepped beyond what he ought to be doing and not trusting anyone to make decisions for themselves, and the accumulation of his power is too much. Harry Bronson, does this governor hold too much power?
Well, I think the governor holds too much power. I've held that position long before COVID-19. I think the governor holds too much power in our budgeting process and other scenarios.
But right now, in this pandemic, is it too much?
Let me finish. More. There should be more balance between the legislative powers and the governor's executive powers. But there is a Court of Appeals case that has prevented that. In this particular scenario, however, when we're in a state of an emergency, we're in a pandemic, it is common that executives are able to garner more power. I think the governor has done that. I think he has done that for the most part in a good way. And I'm also encouraged by what I had mentioned earlier. He's seeking input from the regional economic development councils regarding how do we continue the short term, midterm, and long term. So he is getting information from throughout the state and other folks And I don't think he has overstepped his authority. Certainly he hasn't from a constitutional standpoint. I do wish that he had had involved the legislature a little bit more than he has, both pre and during the COVID-19.
Peter Vasquez, I know you do feel the governor has taken too much power. What should be the limits of a governor's power during a pandemic?
Well, listen, when this all came down, when the governor first got his powers, it made sense. We were under a pandemic. We weren't sure what we were dealing with. But we've gotten to the point where we do know what we're dealing with for the most part, and we no longer need those powers. As a matter of fact, legislation was introduced earlier this year for his powers to be taken away, and Bronson voted against it. So, you know, it needs to be tapered back. We do have a legislative body that is intended to keep him in check, and there's absolutely no reason why all decisions should be going through that process. You know, it's a little concerning to me when I hear a sitting legislator, especially one that has been there with so much seniority, saying things like, I wish the governor didn't do this, or I wish the governor didn't do that, or I wish the governor didn't have enough powers. You know, my question is, what are you doing about it? And you had an opportunity to take some of those powers away. Why didn't you take it? And that's a question that a lot of voters have been asking.
All right, we were talking.
Well, actually, let me answer that. I'm on several bills that would indeed balance the power between the executive and the legislature. I also signed on to a letter asking the speaker to call us back into session so that we could deal with the Medicaid issues and take that out of the hands of the governor, because Medicaid is all about health care. In our state, there's a thing called 340B, which impacts the University of Rochester, Trillium Health, and Anthony Jordan by millions and millions of dollars. We want to go back into session so that we can deal with that issue. So I have taken a number of steps, and there's more I could list to balance the power between the executive and the legislature, and indeed to take action so that we as a legislature take the action, the governor in turn would have to make a decision whether to veto our actions or pass it into law.
You're hearing Peter Vasquez and Harry Bronson, the Republican and Democrat, the candidates for the 138th Assembly District. Harry Bronson is running for a sixth term. Peter Vasquez is running a fourth time for this seat. And after our only break of the hour, we're going to turn to some other questions on economic development, taxes, schools, and a lot more with these candidates. We'll work in some of your comments as well after this only break. Coming up in our second hour, Saturday Night Live poked fun at white people who claim to care about racism and want to learn more, only to run when given the opportunity. Well, there's a new 21-day challenge happening in the greater Rochester area, and this time it's aiming to be different, to achieve real results, to make change in how we think and how we act. How does it work? You'll find out next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before I get back to your phone calls, let me ask our guests about a couple of other quick issues here. We'll try to do them as quickly as we can. Peter Vasquez, let me ask you about schools and Albany's commitment to schools. Your opponent in this race, Harry Bronson, has opposed a state takeover of the Rochester City School District. He has been in favor of other reforms. Where do you come down on those kinds of issues, and what do you think Albany's commitment to schools needs to be, Peter?
Well, I don't think Albany has any commitment to schools, frankly. However, I'd like to point out that a state monitor is state control. However, I believe in local control, Evan. I believe that we have a school board that's highly paid but ineffective. I believe, again, that when we put the parents back in the driver's seat of their children's path, both in education, we start seeing sparks happen. I believe that our focus should be in strengthening the family and working closely as representatives in the community to do so. I think the Regents Board needs to go away, and I think that the Department of Education should serve as a function for monetary purposes only, the collection of taxes, the distribution of the money where it goes, allowing parents, again, to dictate where their tax dollars go. I think when we look at schools like Charles Finney School or Harley, you know, some of the private ones, even some of the charter schools, and we see the successes that they're having. Finney School, for example, a small private parochial school, they don't pick and choose their students based on academics. It's based on needs, and we see more kids coming from impoverished areas that are graduating from major colleges and doing well. And that's when you, again, putting parents back in the driver's seat is the key. The state needs to get out of the way.
Harry Bronson, go ahead.
A couple of things. First of all, I oppose the state takeover because state takeover laws are based in racism and have been proven not to work when they have been implemented, including right here in New York State the last time it happened. Second, the Board of Regents is in place for the exact reason of the discussion we were having prior to the break, and that is to make sure that politics stays out of education as much as possible and to have control over the governor's power. Every child in our community deserves a quality education, and that's what I have fought for. I will continue to fight for it. The monitoring system is not a state takeover. It is a way to have oversight, both academic as well as fiscal oversight of the school district, where we desperately need both of those areas, with someone else taking a look at it and putting together strategies. The law that I champion requires strategies, five-year strategies in both of those areas. They're due, I think, in November's timeframe. That goes to the Board of Regents for review. The legislature will also see it, and the governor will see it. But at the end of the day, it's still local control by parents over their children's education. And, you know, it's interesting that here in Rochester City School District, they chose to go 100% with distance learning, remote learning. Other school districts haven't done that. That is a result of having the superintendent with the ability to make the choices that she needed and that she felt was best for the children in the school district and the families. And so, you know, that's the balancing act that we're constantly trying to achieve so that there's a lot of local control and local voices. And I think here in the COVID-19, you see an example of how it has worked.
Peter Vasquez, do you want to follow that up? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, state monitor is state control. Any state involvement is state control. We have a school board locally that doesn't even have a subcommittee for curriculum review. And to imply that the state knows better than parents, Evans, is just beside, I mean, as a parent, as a grandparent, I'm just beside myself. We talk about, you know, the Regents Board, you know, again, it serves no purpose. It honest to goodness does. A group of people so far away from the parents' needs and the family's needs is just, well, you know what? Just look at the numbers. Again, this is my fourth time running. This is the 10th year that I'm running this race. And it's still the same issue. We're still the highest paid school board. We're still one of the worst school districts in the state and one of the poorest areas in the entire country. So I'm sorry, again, those policies don't work.
All right, response, Harry Bronson, if you want.
Parents need to be.
Yeah, go ahead, Harry Bronson.
Well, I think that Mr. Vasquez is correct. We have a lot of work to do. I think, however, the analysis of it is a bit elemental and that it's much more complex. I used this phrase one other time, and it is it's what educators said when we were doing some educational reform a number of years ago. And this is an exact quote. Students with an achievement gap also have an income gap, a healthcare gap, a housing gap, a family gap, and a safety gap, just to name a few. If we truly want to improve educational outcomes, these are the real issues that must be addressed. So in those issues, what you see is we're putting so much burden on the educational system when what we really should be doing is addressing some of these societal issues. And that's why I'm a firm believer that we should have community-based schools. That's why I participated in My Brother's Keeper, which was President Obama's charge to put together curriculums and strategies to better educate our young men of color. And New York State was the only state that actually did that, and we've been funding that program, and the Rochester City School District participates in that program. So for me, you know, this is a complex issue, and we have to work through it. I mean, our graduation rates went up significantly. East High is a wonderful example of success. So there's lots of things that we have to continue to work on. But Mr. Vasquez is right. We have a lot of work to do. And I think my progressive policies and approaches to this is the way that we need to go to get that quality of education for our students.
Do you want to see, Harry Bronson, a super wealth tax that some in your party have proposed that would the goal of which would be to tax only the very wealthiest earners, not even sure how many exist in your district, and then bring in more revenue for New York State to allow for the state to absorb some of the hit during the pandemic? I mean, the governor's talked about 20% across the board cuts for everything, and some in your party have proposed a super wealth tax. Where are you on that?
So the super wealth tax is a tax on ultra-millionaires and billionaires. There are several versions of those bills. I am co-sponsor on some of them. And no, there is nobody who lives in our district that would be taxed under those proposals. The idea is, and there's a number of them. Some is changing the tax rate on high-level earners. Some is to have, when there's a transfer of assets, there would be an additional tax for extremely wealthy people. There's a stock transfer to capture that rate at a regular income rate instead of on a capital gains rate. And there's a number of a sale of or rather purchase of a second home valued at $5 million or higher. So there's a lot of different taxes there. I'm generally supportive of that approach. I also am supportive of legalization of marijuana, although when we bring that industry above ground and we can tax it, that's going to be a more long-term revenue stream. I am supportive of legalization of online gambling, which is occurring already. We just don't tax it. That would be immediate revenue. And then, you know, we can talk about the expense side, but on the revenue side, those are issues that I would be supportive of.
Okay, and before I let your opponent respond, what do you think people who would be in that tax category, and I don't know how many that would even be in your own district, but what do you think people in the state who are in that tax category would do? Most of the time, the wealthiest people in this country, they figure out pretty good ways of not paying taxes, of finding loopholes or just moving. What do you think people would do?
You know, we increased the rate previously. We did that in December of 2011, which I participated in, and we did not see a wave of people leaving the area.
They just paid the higher rate?
Yeah, they paid the higher rate. And you know, the reason is because, you know, the hit on them is a small hit. Although it's significant revenues, billions of dollars of revenues coming into the state. But to them, the hit is a lot less than what it would be, obviously, for you or I.
Okay. Peter Vasquez, how do you see that?
Yeah. I believe the governor said recently, or at least in the last few months, that taxing the rich probably wasn't the best idea because they're leaving the state. And I've never been a big proponent of raising taxes in a state that taxes are already the highest across the board, from business to individual personal income. I mean, it's eventually we're going to run out of money. Shoot, I considered it at one point. But where I believe that we should be focused on, well, first of all, I used to be a tax collector with the IRS. And one thing that I've learned is that people will pay their taxes, not always willingly, but will pay their taxes. However, when they say enough is enough, they do tend to move, especially some of the more wealthiest. Evan, we need to cut waste. We need to cut duplication, something that the state is notorious for. I mean, we've got nonprofits in just about every corner that's just about fully funded by tax dollars. I mean, we need to start seeing where we can implement some lean management policies and start reducing the expenditure that we have. New York State has one of the worst business climates. It's been on the top of that list for a very, very long, for as long as I've been looking. Same thing with personal income tax. But we need to stop wasting money. We need to stream where we can. I mean, how long is it going to be before millionaires do decide to leave the state?
All right, so Harry Bronson, your opponent says cut waste and especially money for nonprofits who are almost, as he says, entirely funded by the state, can't raise taxes in that way, and you must improve the business climate. Go ahead, Harry Bronson.
Yeah, well, nonprofits are doing much of the work that government used to do. We have shifted our mental health services to community-based nonprofit organizations. We have shifted our services for people with disabilities to our community-based nonprofits. Those nonprofits indeed are significantly funded by the state through contracts. Unfortunately, what's happening right now is that those contracts aren't being renewed, and the governor has been doing a 20% reimbursement withholding. Not a cut yet, but we expect some cuts in the future. I will be holding a press conference tomorrow to put pressure on the governor to release $4 billion of the CARES Act money that was supposed to be used for health and human service nonprofits. We're hoping to get those funds released. So for me, I think that nonprofits are a valuable part of our community. And they're funded through charitable donations, and they're funded, some of them, not all of them, some of them are funded through governmental contracts, either for a reimbursement of expenses or fee for services, things of that nature. So I'm going to continue to support those nonprofits.
I have one quick question for you, then I got to take a phone call. But Harry, do you accept your opponent's framing that we have a terrible business climate in this state?
You know, there's lots of measures of it. But when these businesses are saying they need less regulation, you know, it's those regulations that keep our workers safe and healthy. It's those regulations that make sure that our families get paid leave. It's those regulations that make sure that our families get paid a fair wage and benefits. And so for me, I believe that there does need to be a balance so that we have businesses that can survive. Right. But I also think that we need regulations and requirements for fair wages.
All right. Very different views on the business climate from these two candidates. Real quick, Jane, you got about 40 seconds. Got to keep it
okay.
Tight. Go ahead.
I admire Governor Cuomo. I think he's done the tough thing, which is to face us all with reality. And he's going to get tougher, and I believe he probably should, and carry through with fining these businesses that don't enforce the protections. I heard that St. John Fisher had 64 new cases this week there. So they're not getting the message. Somebody is not getting the message. Thank you very much, Evan.
All right, Jane. Thank you very much. About 40 seconds apiece for the candidates. Harry Bronson, 40 seconds or less, your closing thoughts for listeners as you run for re-election. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's been my honor to serve the families of the 138th Assembly District for the last 10 years. We've worked closely together to put in policies that recognize the dignity and humanity of every person that lives in New York State. And I want to continue that work. I want to continue to fight for you. And I ask for your vote come November 3rd or early voting.
Yeah, in many ways, I read today Matt Dowd said of ABC News said we should think of November 3rd as the end of voting, not just Election Day. A lot of people voting already. Peter Vasquez, 45 seconds. Your final thoughts. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Well, we have two clear paths. We have one with big government. We have one with a controlling government and out of balance government. And then we have a path, which is the path that I propose, which is a path that puts people back in the driver's seats, puts parents back in control of their children's educational path and medical paths. Listen, we talk about race relations in this race, and we have. However, listen, I understand as a Hispanic man, I've dealt with it my entire life. And I'll tell you what, I stand with all black lives, especially the 20 million plus that have been aborted since Roe versus Wade. And a number that is exceeded all other factors combined. Thank you very much, Evan. VoteVasquez.com is our website.
VoteVasquez.com. Harry Bronson, your website.
BronsonForAssembly.com and social media, Harry B. as in boy, Bronson.
Harry Bronson, thanks for making the time for the program.
Thank you, Evan.
Peter Vasquez, a pleasure. Thanks for making the time, sir.
Absolutely. You guys have a great day.
You too. Peter Vasquez and Harry Bronson are the candidates in the 138th Assembly District, and you have heard them at length now. Hope you're feeling better informed when you've got to make a decision, whether you're voting early by mail, the 9 days in Monroe County at least, early before November 3rd or on November 3rd. More connections coming up in a moment.